Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 94, with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking with Rebecca Smith of Better Life Bags. Rebecca has lots of great information when it comes to pricing your products, and she also shares her very unique viewpoint that she has when it comes to hiring her employees. At the end of the episode, I left another blooper in. I hope you enjoy it. Now, let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we are so excited to welcome Rebecca Smith of Better Life Bags. Rebecca's handmade bag business started as a hobby and a small Etsy shop, and it's grown into a booming business. What I love about Rebecca's business is that she employs women in Detroit who have barriers to employment because of their culture, their immigrant status, or other reasons. Rebecca is truly making a difference in the world, and she's a brilliant business mom to boot. So welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Rebecca, could you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself, your family, and then going into a little bit more detail about how you got started in business?
Sure. Yeah. I like to say I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I never set out to own a business, although it turns out that I really do love it, and I kind of have a knack or a gene for entrepreneurialism. So it's definitely something I enjoy doing. But my husband and I moved from Savannah, Georgia to the middle of Detroit, Michigan, 5.5 years ago, and we moved here intentionally on purpose. It wasn't an accident. We wanted to really invest in a diverse community with needs around us. And when we moved up here, we had one child. He was 6 months old when we moved, and I had just opened that Etsy shop. So it was sort of just a little hobby of mine. Now we have 3 total children. So my son is now 5.5, and we have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old.
So, Rebecca, how did you grow your business from, you know, initially just you as a hobby, and then now I know you have quite a few employees? What were kind of those early steps that you took to grow and to get the word out?
We relied, well, I say we because I'm used to saying that now, but it was just me back then. About 6 years ago is when I opened the Etsy shop, and I worked for free, basically, for probably 2 or 3 years, or very little I worked for, and relied a lot on social media and a blog. I naturally was already doing social media, and I was interested in blogging, so that felt pretty natural to me as a person to then open a social media account and a blog under the Better Life Bags name. And that was actually the most crucial element to our success, I think, was we entered into it at a kind of a good time, the social media business as social media aspect, and grew just kind of naturally through that, through different connections. And it was helpful. Not everyone has this luxury, but I was able to work for basically free for those first 2 to 3 years to kind of get things going without feeling like this was what my family needed to depend on. So I feel like those two things, being able to work for basically free and then really utilizing social media as a business, was pretty crucial to our early growth.
Was that a purposeful decision to be basically working for free and not taking home an income, or was it just that you were in your growing pains and figuring out how to do business?
Yeah, it was pretty unintentional. In fact, I didn't even know that I was working for free. My husband took me out to Panera one day and sat me down. This was about 3 years in. And it was, the business was starting to grow to the point where I wasn't able to just do it during nap times anymore. My kids' nap times or after bedtimes. I was starting to have to ask him to, like, hey, can you watch the kids for 2 hours while I go sew? So it was encroaching on family time. And he sat me down at Panera and he said, I've done the math. Did you realize you're making about $2.25 an hour? And I was like, I don't care. I love it. I love doing this. It's so fun. He says, it was okay at the beginning because it was just your, it was your hobby. I had no intentions to grow it into a business, but as it started moving in that direction of becoming bigger and bigger, I basically had to decide if I was just going to shut it down or keep, like, force it to be small, or he said, or you have 6 months to figure out how to make, how to, like, give yourself at least minimum wage. And that's when I really dove intentionally headfirst into utilizing social media. I mean, I had 6 months. I had, like, this timer over my head where I had to, like, shut down the thing that I loved if it wasn't going to be able to make money. And I intentionally started seeking out bloggers who had large followings of people who were considered my customer, I guess. So I wasn't targeting the thrifty mom blogs or the couponing mom blogs. I was targeting the, like, fashion blogs and style blogs or mommy blogs, I guess, and sending them product and asking them to review it on their blog just to kind of help get our name out there. And that was really, really effective 3 years ago to do that. And in 6 months, we were, gosh, I don't know the exact numbers, but it was at that 6 month point that I was not only paying myself well, but I was able to bring on our first employee to help keep up with demand. So it worked, thankfully.
That's awesome. And I'm curious, and maybe you don't remember, I know it was a bit ago, but how many bags were you sending out? How many bloggers were you enlisting during that time period to really get the word out?
Gosh, if I had to estimate, I wasn't doing it really aggressively. So maybe 3 or 4 to 5 a month. I think I tried to do like one a week, try to land one a week.
Okay.
Like land an account, I guess, or land a blogger about once a week to be able to send them a product. So not super aggressively. And I really wanted it to be, I wanted it to feel organic and to feel like it fit both of us really well, both them and me and our business. And I actually have made many of my, like, closest online friends through those first initial sharings of the company.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. And they still will help me out even now. And of course, their followings have even gotten larger in 3 years. So it's a cool way to develop relationships. You're not just using each other, but they're like genuine friends, and we help share each other's platforms now. So
besides upping your exposure level through reaching out to bloggers and upping your social media presence, did you do anything on the back end to bump up that revenue or lower your expenses in order to make your business viable within that 6 month time frame?
Yeah, I am a huge believer in that. I want our product to be really, really exceptional. We're a missional business, so we're a business that has a mission. But I don't want us ever to be this charity where people come and they're like, I'll just buy this bag. It's going to a good cause. But I want them to be surprised and really, like, happy with the quality that the bag is. That it's, they would have bought it regardless of the mission because it's such a great product. But the mission just adds to the whole experience and to the purpose behind it. So I really focused on, like, let's get this product really good quality. We also started experimenting with leather at that time. So before this point, all of our bags were fabric, still custom. Every customer was still going on the website and designing their own bag, but it didn't have any leather aspects to it. So around this time, I started thinking, what would make us stand out? What would make this product really last long? And someone suggested, actually one of those bloggers, those original bloggers, said, what if you added a leather strap or like a leather flap, and directed me towards a leather supplier. And I just started playing around. And I think that with that timing of adding the leather and sending product to bloggers, both of those combined and still being able to be like this custom design your own bag, all of that together was just like this, I don't know, nuclear bomb of, like, explosion of orders that forced me to hire start hiring for my community.
I love that. And I have to say, you know, only knowing your brand in the past year or so, the leather seems such, it's an important part of a Better Life bag. I mean, that's kind of what I think about is it's that mix of leather and a fun fabric, and they look awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I did want to touch a little bit more on pricing, because I'll let everyone in on the fact that a few months ago, I attended your wonderful class on pricing through the Influence Network. Could you maybe give us a bit of the scoop on how you determine how to price your bags and kind of how you worked through that?
Absolutely. So at the beginning, with my first Etsy shop and, you know, just this little hobby of mine, I sort of pulled a number out of the hat. Like, I wonder what I would pay for this fabric bag. And I think I slapped like $45 onto it. And I did a little bit of research. So I like searched Etsy for other tote bags or different things and tried to go into the middle. But there was no scientific anything involved with that number. It was very arbitrary and just kind of picking it. When my husband told me I had to make money, you know, he wasn't going to watch the kids so I could get paid $2.25 an hour. That's when I visited the cost. I was like, huh, I wonder how much this bag really costs to make. And we were adding leather, like I said, at the same time. So when I first added up what a bag would make materials-wise, it was so shocking to me. Like, no wonder I'm maybe making $2.25 an hour, but I'm probably losing that too because of how much the material goes into this bag. So I did a lot of research online and on how to price products, and was pretty disappointed with what I found. It just seemed, so most people when I did research would say, you add up all the materials, so how much, you know, does your fabric cost? How much does your leather cost? Everything that walks out the door with your product. So count your business cards that you send out and your shipping supplies. That's your materials. And then add your labor. Give yourself an hourly wage. And how long does it take to make this bag and to ship this bag and to get it to the post office? And then times that by 2. And then you get your wholesale price. So then times it by 2 again. And then you'll get your retail price. When I did that with my bags, they were coming out to be like $350 or $425. And I was discouraged because I would not pay that for a bag. And I really wanted our products to be able to reach a majority of Americans. So yes, our bags are still expensive. I think our most expensive one starts at $225 and goes all the way down to $18. But it's something that's within reach that you can save, you know, a couple months for. We have customers who will write in saying, I've been saving 6 months for this bag. And that just, like, means so much to us that people are doing that. So I came out with this different formula for how we price our products at Better Life Bags. And we're a little bit different because we don't push our wholesale price. So we are direct to the customer, sell directly to them. So we cut out the middleman, basically, in a lot of ways, because we're also manufacturing the bags here in Detroit. So the simple formula I've come up with that seems to be working pretty well for us is I do the materials and the labor, and then I times that by 0.45, which is 45%. And that is the very, very minimum that I should sell this bag at. So in our case, if when we do wholesale, because we have a few wholesale accounts, that's our wholesale price that we're charging the boutiques. And then I times that number. I play around with it. We never go higher than times 2 at that point, but we try to get them close to times 2. Because in that times 2 is my manager's salaries, my cost for rent, my internet, our taxes that we have to pay the government at the end of the year, you know, all the overhead that goes into it that the consumer doesn't really think about really when they're purchasing a bag. But yeah, I don't know. Did that make sense? Was that way too much information probably? But pricing is a passion of mine. I really believe in pricing your products well so that people can get paid well, and that you can do really good things with the money that's coming in.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, I'm glad you went into a lot of detail on that, because I've also seen that formula before, the times two again. And on our Etsy shop, if we applied that same formula to our Etsy shop, it would also be a ridiculous amount.
Yeah, it's so discouraging.
Yes, it is. We use various multiples as well to come up with something that actually makes sense to us and the consumer.
Right. Yeah.
Because obviously if you price that, if you just take that formula without thinking about it, at some point the consumer is unwilling to pay a certain price.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, obviously pricing too low is not
exactly
so smart either.
Right. It does no help for doing good, and it does no help for helping other businesses be able to price their products well. So, yes, there's a middle ground, and it's a mixture of actual science and math, and then a mixture of experimentation. There have been, you know, we experiment with our prices every now and then, and at the beginning when we were first getting them set, to see where's like the sweet spot for this bag price. Not to be afraid to change your prices also.
What would you say to maybe that person who, you mentioned you don't do a lot with wholesale,
mm-hmm.
and I think sometimes when people who are content to do retail, or they have the Etsy shop, so they're selling direct to the customers,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the pricing formulas do work in that wholesale number, do they need to force themselves to have a wholesale price, or do you think it's okay to just focus on a retail price that works for them?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's okay to not do wholesale. I think there's a lot of pressure when you become a small business owner, a handmade business owner, to do wholesale, whether that's from you just see everyone else doing it, or maybe boutiques are starting to approach you and you're like, wow, that would be really cool. But I think it's really hard to do both wholesale and retail really well. I actually don't think I can think of one company that I know of that does both really well and gets like an equal amount of revenue from both. Most of them have one that they focus on and they put, you know, 80% of their efforts into, and then maybe 20% will come from the other revenue stream. So I would say, like, pick which one you prefer doing. Do you enjoy marketing to the customer, dealing direct to the customer, then price your stuff reasonably and forget about wholesale. Or maybe you don't want to really market your products to the general public and you'd rather just make really great stuff and then approach boutiques to do the selling for you and then price your stuff probably the same, you know, that you would if you were doing retail, and let them figure out what the retail price is. So, yeah, it's really hard to do both, I think, in my opinion.
I agree. I think that's great advice. I know you've touched on this a little bit, but, you know, your business has a mission behind it. And, you know, you're really passionate about hiring women in Detroit who have barriers to employment. Can you share a little bit more about that and how that developed and how that's working for your business?
So back at that pivotal Panera moment, when I had 6 months to figure out how to get this business to make money and started reaching out to bloggers, and it worked. And I suddenly had all these bags I had to make, and I already was running out of time to do them. So I had to make a decision, you know, do I shut everything down? Do I find a factory in China to outsource to? Or do I take this third option and hire women from my community? I had mentioned before that we moved to this neighborhood on purpose. We wanted to really invest in the community and to like plant our roots here and to make a difference. And I don't know why I hadn't thought previously that the business could be a platform for this. So I remembered this woman I had met the first week we moved there. So this was like 3 years into being in Detroit. And she was from Yemen, a recent immigrant from Yemen. And her husband worked at a gas station. They had 4 kids. Their kids were just sleeping on mattresses on the floor. They didn't have a lot of furniture, barely making it, but she knew how to sew. So I called her up desperately, and I'm like, please help me make these bags. And She starts doing all the insides of the bags, and I start doing all the outsides and put them together twice as fast. And she was so good at the insides that I said, here, let me teach you the outsides. You do all these bags. I'll do all these bags, different styles. And every week I would go over to her house and drop off the fabric and pick up the bags that she had completed the week before. And about six, eight months into this, I get to her door and she said, come here, I need to show you something. And so I follow her into her house and up to her second story. And she takes me to her girls' rooms where she has bought bunk beds for the first time with the money that we'd been giving her to make bags. And at that moment, it just kind of clicked in my mind. Like, whoa, like the money I was giving you is making a difference in your life and in your children's lives. And suddenly you have enough to be able to provide what many Americans just think are necessities in life. Mm. So it was at that moment that I realized what the power of this business could potentially do for women in my community. Because this woman was not the only one, you know, in this situation in our neighborhood. So we, started intentionally hiring after that and directed. We'd always had like a better life aspect to the company before I started hiring intentionally. We used to give 10% of every sale in microloans through Kiva.org to like people in third world countries. And a picture of that person that the microloan went to help would go out with the bag. And it would be like, here's your bag, but here's who your bag really helped. So now their names are written on a card. It says your bag was made by, and then it has the woman from our community, her name, and a little story about what the money is going, you know, to help better their life and make them feel honor and respect. Yeah, so that's the short story of it, but.
I really love that. That's fantastic. How many women do you have now working for you, and how did you slowly find these women to add to your company?
So we have 16 of us now in our workshop, and we've never done, you know, a Craigslist ad or anything. We've kind of started with the one, and then it networked out through her, or through other people that I know in the neighborhood. It's all been kind of networking that we found the next one or the one after that and the one after that. One of our employees I found just out on the street. She was asking for money. She had 4 kids, didn't have a job. And the bright eye, she needed bus fare to go donate plasma, which would pay her like $40 or something. And I said, well, why don't you just come to the workshop and cut some leather scraps for like 8 hours? I'll pay you hourly. And so now, like a year and a half later, she's like full time at our office doing much more than cutting leather scraps. So I feel like everyone has come to us who should be here, you know, like has brought to us. Been brought to us by the Lord, I say. But
that's amazing.
This is going to sound like a really bad question, but I'm going to ask it, and you can scold me for asking it.
Never.
If you want to, Rebecca. But does it feel risky to hire a woman like that? Did that feel like a risky? I love that story. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. But my heart says yay, and my mind says, oh my gosh, that's so risky. Did it feel, were you pushing yourself to do something that amazing at that moment?
That's a really good question. So I probably have a couple of thoughts going through my head. One, had you told me 6 years ago that I was going to be hiring women from Detroit, Michigan, who have barriers to employment, I would have probably run the opposite direction, like as fast as I could. That to me, like, there's a lot of challenges that come with hiring intentionally from our neighborhood, but it happens so slow. And often, like, I feel like I look back, I'm like, wait a minute, like what just happened like this last 6 years? So it happened slow enough that I almost didn't know what I was getting into until it had already been pretty established. But then the other aspect of our business is I want to be 100% business minded, and I want to be 100% mission minded at the same time. So when I'm making decisions, I have both of those on the forefront of my mind. So what, yes, I want to make good business decisions, and yes, I want to do it in a way that honors people and helps people. So, for example, we don't pay hourly. We pay per piece, per bag. So I don't have to micromanage people's, like, hourly work, but they're given this goal. It's based on $18 an hour, so it's a pretty, like, pretty great wage, and it's based on how long it takes me to make the bag at a, not a hurried pace, but not a slow pace, so just like a focused pace. And it gives them control over how much they make. One of our seamstresses probably makes like $25, $28 an hour now because she knows her bags really well and she's motivated and she has ownership over her paycheck, really. So we've sort of figured out ways to minimize the risk business-wise and really elevate the missionally. I don't know. Does that make sense? But yes, there are many challenges.
That definitely makes sense. I think that's a great solution, the way that you pay them. I think that's awesome. Like you said, they get to take ownership, but in your case, it minimizes the risk a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So while we're on the topic of hiring staff, I know that you've started an internship program. So I'm curious about how you set that up, how you find great interns, and, you know, just kind of how that's worked out to have employees coming in each summer.
Yeah. So the past couple summers, we've just had one single intern, and it's been the same intern for two summers in a row. And we kind of knew her ahead of time. She was connected to some people in the community going to fashion school in Michigan. And so that was an easy, like, low risk take on an intern. But this summer we decided, let's do this full on. Let's put out a call for interns. Let's have them fill out an application. Let's pick three or four and do a whole internship program. So this is our first year doing the official internship. So as far as like setting it up, we're kind of new to it, but we just did a shout out on Instagram saying we were wanting to hire their unpaid internships, but you know, they get free product and it's going to be a lot of learning about what small business is like, learning about marketing, social media marketing, product development. And we had them fill out an application and send in their resume. And we gave them a deadline to do that by. And after that deadline, we took a week to sift through it. So everyone on my leadership team, there's about four of us, we all picked our top favorites. And we did that based on one of the questions was, what are you hoping to learn this summer? And I knew a little bit about what we could teach and what we could offer. And a lot of that was social media marketing, running a missional business, things like that. So we sifted through what they wanted to learn and what we could offer, but we also stalked their social media channels because we knew that we wanted to bring people on board who were missionally minded and who were coming here to serve and to love on our women. And we wanted the interns to mesh and gel as well. And so it was really interesting. So we didn't want partiers, basically. I mean, these are college girls, so I don't know how else to, like, walk around that. But we looked at Instagram feeds, and we narrowed our applicants down in half just based on what their Instagram feeds presented about themselves, which was eye-opening to me as an employer thinking about hiring. And I think, interestingly, it should open the eyes of college girls who are seeking employment, because employers are looking, and if your account is public, they can. So that was one way. We just really were looking for people who fit into our culture and our community up here and wanted to learn. So they're in week two right now of the program, and they are just really awesome girls. We rented them an Airbnb place up in a city, which is a really nice little place. It's just down the street from me, so it's close if they need anything. And yeah, we're having a blast with it. I hope they are too.
That is so cool. I was just thinking about that when you said we brought them up to Michigan, and I'm thinking, mm-hmm. okay, wait, brought them. Oh, so they're not all local. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That they get Airbnb place, you know. So, yeah, that's really neat. I think I would love to see, like, a video blog of life as an intern for your company. I think that'd
yes.
be pretty fun.
They are going to be taking over our social media on the weekends, and they're going to do, like, life as an intern type posts. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, mostly our Instagram account they'll be taking over. But
okay.
And they started their own hashtag, like BLB interns, I think. So you can follow that too. They're just so,
awesome.
They're awesome girls.
Are there any rules surrounding the use of unpaid interns?
Yeah, there's a lot of rules about it. The biggest one, kind of like the, if you're a green light or red light to go, is they can't be doing anything that someone should be paid for. So I couldn't hire 3 interns to come make product for me or to run our social media account or, you know, things that I should have, there should be a paid spot for. So they're here and they're taking, like last week they finished up an Instagram class. So they're learning about what's it like to run social media for a company, and then they're going to try their hand at it on the weekend. And they're out taking pictures that would match what our current social media director is doing to kind of get an idea of what it's like to run an account, but they're not actually running it. Does that make sense? That's how I understand it. I could be completely wrong, but, and that makes sense in my mind too. Like, of course, you don't want to bring in 3 unpaid girls and then ask them to do the work that you should be paying someone for.
So really, this is all about you benefiting them as interns and giving them experience mm-hmm. working in the business. It's really not a huge benefit back to you.
Right. Except that it gives me potential hires in the future. You know, like I'm getting a good peek into these 3 girls' lives and how they work and the ideas they bring as they're going through these different classes. And then potentially, like, maybe they'll come back after they graduate and apply. And they kind of have an edge up on everyone because we've already seen their work. We've spent six weeks with them, you know. So in that case, it feels beneficial to me for the future when I think down the road.
That's definitely true. Did you say earlier that they are fashion school girls as well, or no? Did I mishear that?
One of them is a fashion merchandising major. Another one is a marketing major. And the third one is something called, like, structural leadership in an organization. So that's her major. So they're all different majors, but all having to do with, like, business.
Speaking of that, did you have a background in fashion or design or anything like that before you went on this bag
journey?
Yes, the journey.
The journey. Interestingly, when I first declared a major in college, I was fashion merchandising. I had done, like, the window displays and mannequin displays at Gap Kids in high school. So I loved, like, visual merchandising, the windows, the displays, the setup of stores. But I got 6 months in, I'm like, man, you know, I really just want to have a family. Fashion merchandising is like weekends, holidays, nights. I'm going to change that to social work. So I switched to social work. And then I got to thinking, man, this is, like, a really hard field. Like, I don't think I want to do this. I'll just be an elementary ed teacher. So I graduated with that and I taught 3 years. And now I'm in this, like, business that combines all 3 of those, like, fields that I had declared in college, like fashion and then social work and teaching. And so somehow they all got meshed together, but I don't have any official business training or any official, like, design training, just a love and a passion for it and a willingness to, like, read every Google article and listen to every podcast.
That's all you need.
It's so true.
Yeah, there's something to be said for just learning all you can and then taking action and, like, the experience. I mean, there's nothing quite like just getting the experience.
Yeah, totally.
Creating and growing and things like that. So Rebecca, with 16 employees now, an internship program, a growing business, but also a mom of three, how does your day or your week look? Like, is there such a thing as a typical day, and how do you, you know, manage your time and make it all work?
My answer to this is always, I have so much help. Like, I don't do, you know, that phrase, how do you do it all? Like, I don't do it all. I have an amazing operations manager who runs the company, basically. Like, one of the best business decisions I feel like I ever made was to stop working in the business and start working on my business. So to take my hands out of the day-to-day operations of the business and start thinking about the growth and the marketing and where is this going and how do I get it there. So I hired an operations manager, and she runs the day-to-day operations, which allows me the time to be a mom when I am at home. I'm not thinking about, oh, I've got to go print off the orders, I've got to go ship the bags, I've got to make sure all the seamstresses have everything they need. She's got that handled. And at the same time, I hired a really awesome nanny who, when I'm at work, she's got the home front covered. You know, she's really investing in my kids, and she's playing well with them and creatively, which allows my mind to be at rest when I'm at work. So typically I come into the workshop I work three full days a week, and then I'm home the other two and then the weekend. So that's a typical week, I guess. And those 3 days change. It also depends on my husband's work schedule. And if he's off, he's an EMT for Detroit, I'm on an ambulance. So when he's off, I try to be off as well. So
sounds like a good mix of work and family. It sounds really nice.
Yeah, I feel really blessed that I get to do this for my job. And it doesn't feel like work to me, which is the best thing ever.
That is.
Definitely. I have to say, too, I'm impressed that you work three full days a week and that's it. You know what I mean? I think that's really impressive, the way you've set up your company to be able to run well and you don't feel like it owns your life. You know?
Yeah.
That's great.
Now, if I could just stop checking my email and Instagram and all of that when I'm not officially in the office, that would be even better. But
so, Rebecca, I know in addition to partnering with bloggers, you've also used Instagram really well to market Better Life Bags. Can you share any tips or strategies or what you've done on Instagram to really grow your business?
Yeah, we do love Instagram. I think one of the first great decisions we made in the social media madness of this world is we chose one platform to do really well instead of trying to do a little bit on every platform. So we ignored pretty much our Twitter account, and our Facebook is second place to Instagram. But honestly, when I was just on my personal Instagram account scrolling through like I do every day, I suddenly found myself at the computer about ready to order this baby wrap thing that I had seen on Instagram. And like my mind just like light bulb moment, like, whoa, how did I get here? How did I get from Instagram to almost purchasing this product from this company that I follow on Instagram? So I went back and I studied what they did to get me to my computer with my credit card. And they posted 3 to 5 times a day. So they were constantly coming across my feed throughout the day. They were in front of my eyes. They posted beautiful pictures. They told their story really well. So we decided to try to emulate that a little bit. And so we post 3 to 4 times a day. We try to just land on the 4. So 4 is like our goal, morning, late morning, afternoon, and night. And we go through a couple different categories of things that we post. Obviously, our bags. We like to repost pictures that customers have hashtagged us on. We like to share our mission almost on a daily basis through something. And then we like to do like behind the scenes photos in the workshop, around the workshop, quotes that like really fit our mission well. So that's a brief answer for how we use Instagram. After we started doing this, there's a really great, I don't know if she's still doing it anymore, Hillary Rushford does an Instagram class that we have recently taken, and just like high five her all the time as she's talking through like her points, taking really great pictures, thinking about the overall aesthetic of your Instagram. Like, how does it look when you just look at those 9 photos? Does it look cohesive? Does it look messy? What's going to make someone want to push, like, follow? Like, I want to follow this Instagram feed. So highly recommend her class, too, if she's still offering it.
But. Yeah, she is, because I actually just joined it.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and I agree. She's got different videos and modules that she walks you through. And even just, you know, I went to her webinar first, and I was blown away by, you know, the tips were amazing. And like you said, it was that focus on the cohesiveness of your feed and how, you know, when someone comes and looks at those first 9 photos, what are they seeing? You know, what's the impression you're giving off? What is your brand all about?
Right.
Yeah. And so for the first time, I feel like, okay, we have an Instagram strategy. We know what we're about there. Yeah, it's great.
It's awesome. Yeah, totally recommend her class.
Well, Rebecca, we have really enjoyed getting to know you, and we have certainly learned a lot about you and your business and how you've grown. As we close, we always like to end with a funny or adorable mom moment that you've had recently.
Okay, well, this one ties with the business, too, so it kind of ties both together. But we had just started renting a new space in our city, and I took my daughter with me. She's 4. I took her to go pick up the keys and kind of tour it for the last, you know, let her see it for the first time. And on the way home, she was sitting in her car seat in the back. I said, "So, Clara, I said, do you think maybe someday you'll grow up and you'll work at Better Life Bags?" And without missing a second, she looks at me and she says, "I'll own Better Life Bags." And I was like, "What? Like, how do you even know that?" So they are watching and listening. So yes, maybe someday my daughter will own Better Life Bags.
Oh, I love that. That's so funny.
She's a woman who knows what she wants.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess I better watch out.
So thank you again, Rebecca. This has been so much fun. Can you just share with our listeners one more time, where is the best place for them to find you online?
So you can find our company, Better Life Bags, on Instagram and Facebook at Better Life Bags. And then you can find me personally on Instagram at Rebecca Smith Online. That's where I hang out mostly.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much, too. I'm sorry, I messed that up. I was distracted for a second. Let me, can I say my great thank you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much for talking with us today, Rebecca. It was lots of fun, and we learned a lot.
Thanks. I enjoyed hanging out with you guys, too.
Okay, that sounded better. Thank you.
No problem.
For the show notes, head to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/94. I hope you're having a great day. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.